heard of a television show yesterday. Just last night. It's called The Good Place. Anybody know this show? The premise of it is that The Good Place, heaven, is for those who have lived an extraordinarily good life on earth. And then they get to go to the good place, and if not, they go to the bad place. So, pretty simple little premise there. But this premise isn't quite so simple, because it ends up in the story through the, I don't know, three or four seasons, right, that the problem is the good place hasn't received anybody for centuries. Isn't that something? This is amazing. It's like half of a good theology. And it's that, it's, and the reason is this, that a good life on earth, there's, they keep score. And they keep score not only of the things that you do and the things that you intend to do, but also they keep score of the unintended things that take place in every action that we take. I know. Right. So you got, yeah. Boy, things are really starting to cook already. All right. So, for example, the example that was given to me was there is somebody who wants to give his grandmother, mother, somebody flowers. Beautiful idea, right? Give somebody flowers. That's points, isn't it? That's a good thing. Give somebody a gift like that. Okay. Those points, though, get negated by the fact that these flowers were raised in a place far, far away using lots of pesticides and using labor that was not paid a just wage. Points taken away for that. That's not good. Right? And so, in the midst of our system, it's just really hard to be good. Now, you might think that's a simple little thing, and, you know, I mean, it is, and it might... Here's the thing about that really got my attention was this. Coming back from Minnesota, I was in the airport with a guy, Spanish-speaking guy, an accountant, big-time accountant, and he started talking to me, of all things, about roses in Colombia, in the country of Colombia. Most of the roses that we give that come into the United States are from Colombia. Who knew, right? We knew about the drugs. We didn't know about the roses. So his job was, when he first went to Colombia, he lived there for 5 or 10 years, he said, he got was to make a way for the roses to actually get through the cartels and come to the United States. And he did it in some ways by allowing the cartels to take advantage of the roses and to invest in it, launder money in it, that kind of stuff. So, I am now sorry to tell you all that when y'all give people roses, you don't get any good points. Because it gets negated, that's the word I'm trying to say, negated by this whole process by which the roses arrive. So, in this system, it makes perfect sense that nobody ever gets to the good place. Right? I think this has a lot to do with this whole business of Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly calling. Because Lady Wisdom says, come, eat and drink, my banquet is set, come and eat in enlightenment. Be enlightened. Live in the light. By contrast, Lady Folly says, come here. Stolen water is really good. Eaten bread in secret, oh, it's delicious. You're going to love it. Hide. Lady Wisdom says, let go of maturity. Lady Folly says, don't let go of anything. Don't let go of anything. Don't worry about anything. Just come and eat in the dark. Hide yourself in the dark. And that seems to me like that's exactly how we often are invited, tempted to live in the darkness. After all, whether we know about it or not, who wants other people to know the folly that we live, the mistakes that we make, the sin that we have? Who wants that? Nobody. by way of the earthly way of looking at things is that that's actually wisdom, to hide your faults, to hide your sin, to don't let anybody know. Why? Because they're going to think less of you. I don't know exactly why we do that. Maybe we think that if we hide it from ourselves and others, God won't see it either. And maybe part of the folly in all of it is to think that God cares. That God, not that God doesn't care, that God keeps score. That might be the problem. Huh? Really. So stay in the dark. Don't let anybody, people see the other stuff that will take points away from your goodness. Which is completely ridiculous. This is why that's half of a good theology, but the other half of it is that God is not interested in keeping score. In fact, God is saying, you know what? What I really want you to do, and what the church invites us to do, is every single Sunday we get up here, and what do we say? We confess that we are captive to sin and cannot see ourselves. We have sinned against you in thought, word, and deed by what we have done, what we have not done. You say it, you guys probably say it in your sleep now. You said it for all these years, right? But that's exactly the wisdom over against folly. To open it up. To admit to ourselves the things that we have done. The system in which we live. And the struggles to actually do good, be good in that system. To say, you know what? We're laying it right before you. Here it is. Now, when Jesus says, you must partake of my flesh, what I think he is saying in this is inviting us to understand, not just like Eucharist. That's one thing, and we'll get to that. But the first thing about partaking of his flesh is actually his crucifixion. That we take part in that. And that we should be invited, that we should enter into the house of wisdom to say, oh yeah, we have a part in that. Yeah, we do. And when we do that, when we confess that, when we realize that, then we are also then opening ourselves up to the very mercy that that flesh brings us. So listen, I'm going to read this to you from, I want to make sure I get it right because this guy writes it so beautifully. So Jeff Krantz, he's a pastor and writes, you can find some of his stuff online. Anyway, he says, he pushes the idea of the flesh, right, into something that it's a little uncomfortable, but he's trying to get at the really kind of explicit stuff in John 6 about eating his flesh, right? I mean, he doesn't just say, take my body, it's like my flesh. It's just like, you know, like serving meat at a dinner. He says, he's trying to get at pushing this so that he confesses his own participation in what he calls cannibalistic murder. The cannibalistic murder of Jesus consumed him. The mystery, he says, is no longer centered on the magical transformation of the bread and wine into body and blood, but is now focused on God's miraculous transformation of me from killer to beloved child of God. And he concludes, we find this image of ourselves as killers no less repugnant than the literal imagery of consuming body and blood. He's got that right. We prefer to see ourselves as basically good folks who just mess up from time to time. We continually overlook the human costs of our consumption and economic oppression of the rest of the world, the debt that we wreak daily for the sake of low gas or clothes prices. Jesus, as he offers us himself in all his corporeality, asks us to embrace our murderous natures fully, so that so as to be delivered from them. No foolishness, no hiding. Just put it right out there. And be delivered by the bread of life, by the mercy of God, transforming us from murderer to beloved child of God. And of course, this is really extreme, but doesn't Jesus elsewhere say, you have heard it said, do not commit murder, but I say to you, anyone who is angry with his brother and sister, anyone who insults their brother and sister will be held liable for murder. So it's not that far-fetched. And some time ago, I learned the word for sarcasm. It's the cutting of flesh. So, anybody ever been sarcastic lately?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right? So, it's not so far-fetched to think that, okay, this is part of our understanding of participating in the destruction of Jesus' flesh, the consumption of Jesus' flesh. And openness, the liberation that Jesus invites us to, is to say, yeah, that's me. I participate in that in so many ways. In so many ways that have been hidden from me, from us. Like the example of the roses, right? They're hidden from us. And God is telling us, Jesus is saying, no, come clean, be open, realize it all. Claim it all. Because all of the sin, claim it. Why? Well, because, and this is where I want to talk about the definition of sin. We all know some definitions of sin, right? The stuff that we do that alienates us from God, the stuff that hurts our neighbor, right? Missing the mark, all of those things. And those things all are like, those will lead us towards, actually, a little bit towards keeping the score. Because we did this, and we did this, and we did this. Oh my goodness. What if this, and this is not mine, but I just love it. What if sin is defined in Christ as that which God is already at work forgiving? Can you hear that again? Sin is that which God is already at work forgiving. So when we think of something we've done, instead of thinking, oh no, we got to hide that because that was really bad, we think, the response then is, oh man, that was really bad, I did that stuff. Oh, but wait, God is already forgiving that. Oh, whew. All right. Do you see the difference? Do you understand what I'm getting at here? Right? If we look at it that way, then it's like, okay, yeah, we can totally enter into the house of wisdom. Because we don't have to worry about hiding anything. We don't have to worry about eating in the dark, drinking stolen water, none of that stuff. We can simply enter into the house of wisdom that says, oh yeah, I'm a part of this whole business of sin. And yeah, that is the very thing that God has forgiven us in Jesus Christ. That's our identity. That's actually, Thomas Merton says, that is our nature as the church. Now listen to what Thomas Merton says. He says that this whole business of taking on that, being open, realizing our sin, this is what participation in the church really means. The church is that gathering which takes upon herself all of humanity's sin. The church at once confesses the sins of all as her own and receives in herself the mercy that is offered to all. And then adds, and hands that mercy out into the world. Expresses that mercy to the world.
the mercy of forgiveness. That's what the church's job is. That's our task. And so that fundamentally means stop living in the dark, church. Don't have to live in the dark. The stuff that you're worried about, God is already at work forgiving. No, we actually take it on. Bring it on. Bring in this sin. All right, yes, let us confess it all. Well, every Sunday morning, you know, maybe that's a good idea. Every Sunday morning we'll do that. No, we do that already, all the time, right? And bring it in here, confess it, see it, recognize our participation in it, and receive the mercy of God, the forgiveness of God. That's the role of the church. And that liberation, that freedom that we receive, is then expressed to the world. I know we have a hard time. The church has a hard time not thinking of itself as the good place, right? Where the good people are. Oh my goodness, we have to get over that. Now, I love y'all. And, you know, I understand the goodness, the good that y'all do and the good, and all that. But that's really not our main job. We are called to live in wisdom, to take on that sin and the forgiveness of it and the mercy of it, and live as people who are in need and who receive mercy. And let that reception of that mercy guide us in everything we do. And there won't be any scorekeeping. It'll be relationship. It'll be love. It'll be freedom. It is relationship and love and freedom. And taking that bread and a little sip of wine. That's the foretaste of the real goodness. Come to us, to free us, to open our eyes to the Lord.